Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Next week, lawmakers will return to the State House for the second half of the legislative session. They'll be considering a lot of issues, and at this point, it's not clear how these issues will be resolved. Issues like how to balance next year's budget, a proposal to expand Vermont school districts, and a plan to clean up Lake Champlain and other waterways throughout the state. The legislature will also review Governor Peter Shumlin's plan to boost Medicaid reimbursement rates by imposing a 0.7% payroll tax on all businesses in the state. The governor argues this plan will help lower health care premiums for many businesses by reducing the so-called Medicaid cost shift. But Senate Finance Chairman Tim Ash has some strong concerns about the governor's proposal.
There are some of us who are somewhat worried that this proposal, when we think about it in terms of our health care economy, it feeds the beast. Some of us would like to put the beast on a diet. And so we're still unconvinced that this isn't just adding more dollars into a system that we're actually, I think, almost unanimous across the legislature in saying needs to be reined in.
So what's the future of the governor's plan? This is one of several questions we have for our panel today, a group of some of Vermont's best political reporters. Terry Hollenbeck of 7 Days, Neil Goswami, who is bureau chief of the Vermont Press Bureau. You can see his articles in the Barry Montpelier Times Argus and the Rutland Herald, and also VPR's Pete Hirschfeld. Great to have you here.
Thanks, Bob. Good to be here, Bob.
And you can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition. Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. What do you think are the most important issues for lawmakers to address in the second half of the session? What do you think about the governor's plan to impose a payroll tax and use a good chunk of the money to boost Medicaid reimbursement rates? He says the plan will help lower health care costs for many businesses. What do you think about a tax on sugar sweetened beverages? Is that a good idea, or is this tax a big mistake? 1-800-639-2211 is our phone number. You can send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net. You can also send us comments. You can tweet us. Best of all, give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. So let's start with the state budget for next year. By the end of this month, the House Appropriations Committee is expected to bring a proposal to the floor of the House that will close the more than $100 million budget gap for next year. All sorts of proposed cuts have been thrown on the table, including a plan to reduce the number of House members from 150 to 120. There are a number of people who believe it's going to take a combination of budget cuts and new revenue to balance the budget. Terry, is that the likely scenario?
It does seem like there would have to be some sort of mix by the end, given how there's no the list just seems untenable. The things on it don't seem like they're likely to happen. And some of the payroll taxes, you know, that's not gone over well. So it does seem like they're headed towards some sort of mix of cuts in revenue.
And do we know what kind of cuts are likely at this point?
I can't figure out the game plan here of this list that they came out with just before the break, where, you know, it was everything from parking fees for state employees to reducing the House members, you know, and including closing a prison, which wouldn't actually save that much money. So drastic cuts that didn't add up to that much money in the end. So I would say that list existed just to get people talking.
So, Neil, is this a case where the House Appropriations Committee has to put together a pretty drastic list and people look at it and say, oh, my goodness, I know you were talking about cutting the budget, but I had no idea you were talking about that program. Does that then build support for some new revenue?
I think to some extent this list is designed to do just that. I mean, you're looking at millions of dollars potentially cut from the Vermont Health Connect operations budget, millions of dollars cut from the subsidies that a lot of Vermonters are relying on, closing the veterans home, closing the Green Mountain Care psychiatric facility. All of these things are really, when you put it out to the public, things that aren't going to be embraced very, very much. So I think what this list does, in effect, is starts to build the case for some lawmakers and even for the governor's office that there might need to be some new revenue raised here, and it sort of provides a little cover for them. They can make the case that, well, if we don't find some new revenue, then this is what we're looking at.
With the exception maybe of the 150 to 120. A lot of people might say, hey,
that's a good idea.
Get that done whether we have a budget problem or not.
Let's chop some senators too.
So, Pete, at the beginning of the session, the governor did talk about raising some new revenue. He was talking about doing away with the deduction, income tax deduction for taxes that you paid in the previous year. Do you think he's open to other ideas as well?
He's got to be, because I'm not sure that legislators are going to come around to his way of thinking on this. And they're going to need to find some new revenues lest they experience a full-on revolt from the left. But he and the legislature do seem to be on the same page in terms of how to raise this revenue through changes to the tax code, the income tax code specifically. He wants to eliminate this sort of quirky deduction that we allow where you can deduct from this year's taxes the amount of state taxes that you paid in the last year. This would raise about $15 million. House lawmakers seem more interested in looking for other ways to go about revising the deductions that we allow to generate that much or perhaps more. They say Shulman's plan generates the revenue, but it doesn't do it in quite as progressive a fashion as they would like to see. And they wonder if there are ways to change the income tax code, tweak the deduction allowances in ways that would extract money more proportionally from wealthy filers.
Now, Neil, as part of this whole budget debate, the Shulman administration wants to reopen their contract with state employees in order to get the employees to make some wage and benefit concessions. I think the administration is looking at about a $10 million package. And the administration says to the union, hey, if you don't go along with this, we're going to cut a couple of hundred state jobs. How has the union reacted to this?
Well, it actually could be up over 400 jobs, according to the administration. But, you know, the union obviously has to say, no way, we're not going to renegotiate. No union leader in their right mind would come out initially and say, yeah, let's reopen the contract. My guys are going to be all for it. So for now, the union is holding strong, saying, no, we're not going to do that. And if they maintain that position, they will, in fact, look at some job cuts, and some of their colleagues will lose their jobs. And what the governor really is looking at here is nixing a 2.5% cost of living increase that's in the budget for or in the contract for next year's budget. And then they also have the resumption of these step increases, which state employees are entitled to as they advance through their career. They average out to about, I think, 1.7% to 2%. Increase in pay each year, and the governor's team is looking at slowing those down as well. So the governor makes the case that this isn't money that's already in their pockets. It's money that would be coming to them next year on top of what they're already making now. But so far, the union is not buying that at all.
So, Terry, how much support does the union have at the State House? Do you think some key lawmakers are supporting them, or are people thinking, hey, you have to be part of the solution here too?
Well, I'm sure they have their supporters, but the surprising thing perhaps is that the legislative leaders and the governor all do seem to be on the same page of that something has to come out of state payroll. And I think that unions of all kinds are actually finding this session not to be one of their favorite. The teachers union with the school consolidation bill that I think we'll get to. But I think so far they're showing – the legislative leaders and the governor are showing they're willing to tick off the unions.
So, Pete, how does this affect the governor's relationship with not only the state employees but with unions in general?
It's a relationship that's very much poisoned right now, and it's not just this issue. The teachers union, for example, took real issue with some of the comments that the governor made during a teacher strike in Chittenden County right before the election. Now we see this standoff between him and the state workers union, and there are a lot of people in the labor movement who feel like this is not a guy that they can deal with in the way that they were hoping they'd be able to deal with. And it's unclear to me whether Peter Shumlin has made a strategic calculation that he doesn't need them in order to succeed politically anymore, or if he's confident that he's going to be able to arrive at some kind of resolution with all these different organizations that bring them back on board the Shumlin train.
Today on the program, we're looking at the people and issues at the State House for the second half of the session. What are your thoughts? 1-800-639-2211. Your thoughts about balancing the state budget, any tax increases, which ones would be acceptable, which ones would not? Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. Let's talk to Marla in Randolph. Hi, Marla. Welcome to the program.
Hello, thank you very much. I have a question and a comment. My question is, I'm wondering if marijuana were legalized completely and taxed very, very heavily, wouldn't that help balance the budget? And my comment is, I'm hoping that the legislature will keep funding for Medicaid and Medicare and Social Security. And my concerns also very much have to do with keeping our environment clean, such as Lake Champlain and air quality. I'm very concerned about climate change as well, but I'm wondering what your thoughts are about helping to balance the budget with legalizing marijuana.
Terry, would it be fair to say that legislative leaders have decided that 2015 is not the year that the legalization of marijuana is going to be debated either on the House or Senate floor?
That is correct. And it wouldn't, even if they did pass it this year, it wouldn't solve this year's budget problem because it would take some time to put the infrastructure in place, the rules, the taxing process. It would all be, you know, at least a year out. But I think that they've also been given the advice from Colorado, don't do this just for the tax reasons. You know, there's a lot more to look at than just how much can we make off this, because it would cost a lot to implement. And I think some of the figures are a real ballparky on how much it would bring in.
Well, another big issue that will come up in the second half of the session is the governor's plan to impose a 0.7% payroll tax on all businesses to allow the state to boost Medicaid reimbursement rates. On an annual basis, this tax would raise around $90 million. It would be matched with $100 million in federal funds. The governor says his plan would be a wash for many businesses. Yes, they'll pay the payroll tax, but he says his plan will reduce their health care expenses by addressing the so-called Medicaid cost shift.
We are so sure that we can get this money back to the businesses and individuals who pay it with a 5% premium decrease over what they otherwise would have paid, that we're willing to put in a law. The Green Mountain Health Care Board will audit this annually, and if we don't get the money back to the people who pay it, it sunsets.
Let's see if we can hear from the chairman of the Green Mountain Care Board, Al Gobay. Basically, the governor was saying that he was going to guarantee a 5% reduction in health care costs, and Al Gobay says, you can't do that.
And they're turning to me and saying, you know, can the board guarantee this? And again, I will say no. You know, that if that's the way, the only reason they would do this, then they shouldn't do it. I mean, you cannot, in such a complicated part of our economy, guarantee something like that.
Now, the measure is currently being reviewed by the House Ways and Means Committee, where it appears that a majority of members are very skeptical about this plan. But committee chairwoman Janet Ansel says, don't count that payroll tax out just yet.
We're still looking at it. I know people want me to say it's dead. It's not. It's actually still alive in the committee, and we'll continue to look at it.
Lots of questions here. Do lawmakers end up supporting the governor's plan? Do they look for other funding sources? Do they consider phasing all of this in? Pete, what do you think? What's the status of this payroll tax?
The payroll tax is not faring particularly well in the legislature, and there are a lot of reasons for that, some of which you just outlined. However, there is broad agreement that the legislature does need to do something to address this Medicaid cost shift, that a lot of people who are involved in the system have made a compelling case is leading to rapid increases in private health insurance rates. The House Committee on Healthcare just last week, before adjourning, put out a list of expenditures that it has endorsed, and that includes a pretty healthy increase in Medicaid reimbursement rates. They have yet to say what sort of revenues they would want to use to pay for that. We presume that when they get back next week, they will endorse using a two cent per ounce tax on soda. But there's certainly not clear sailing for that proposal either. So where we're at right now is everyone agrees that they need to do something to reduce the Medicaid cost shift. No one agrees yet on how you find the money to pay for it.
And Terry, the state has also added, I think, 23,000 new people to Medicaid in the past year through the Medicaid expansion provisions of the Affordable Care Act. So if lawmakers do nothing on this issue, does it make the whole cost shift problem even worse?
Sure, it could. And I really think they're getting pressure from a lot of providers and a lot of arenas to do something about the cost shift. I think that that will have to be on the table.
And Neil, the state's business community, very split on this. Businesses for Social Responsibility say, yeah, the payroll tax is a fair way to raise money for this. The Vermont Chamber of Commerce says, not so fast. This is sort of the opening here. You're probably going to raise this tax in the future. So there's a pretty healthy debate going on there.
There's definitely a healthy debate. I don't think it's any real surprise that Businesses for Social Responsibility came out for it and the chamber is against it. They represent, a different point of view within the business community. I think it's important to understand, though, that on top of the cost shift, we have the expansion of Medicaid, as you mentioned, and that's going to cost $16 million more that the state has to come up with. You know, they don't have to do the cost shift, and you can debate the consequences of not addressing the cost shift, but you have to pay the $16 million for the expansion. So there's probably disagreement all over the state, maybe even in this room, on whether the payroll tax is alive. I tend to think it's very much alive because the legislative leaders, no lawmaker, and nobody has come up with an alternative to raising enough money to address the issue. And unless and until somebody comes up with some credible alternative, I think this is very much alive.
And all this talk about healthcare reform and single payer has really turned people's focus on who's paying for healthcare right now, and perhaps more importantly, who isn't paying for healthcare mm-hmm. right now. And we saw this press conference last week from Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility. We saw some employers of some consulting firms, some engineering firms say, look, we've got large multinational employers here. They're referring to places like Walmart, mm-hmm. Big box stores, who not only aren't providing insurance but are paying their employees wages that make them eligible for the Medicaid that the rest of us have to fund. And we need to do something that addresses this systemic inequity in the private sector, or we're going to find ourselves in a place where a very small number of people are paying the freight for everyone else. The payroll tax, they argue, is one way that they can begin to rectify this imbalance.
Today in the program, we're looking at the people and issues of the second half of the legislative session. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. We've been talking about the cost shift, a possible payroll tax. There's also a tax proposed on sugar-sweetened beverages. What are your thoughts on these issues? Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today, we're looking at the people and issues of the second half of the legislative session. We've got a great group of reporters here. VPR's Pete Hirschfeld, Neil Goswami, who is Bureau Chief of the Vermont Press Bureau, and also Terry Hallenbeck of 7 Days. Your thoughts? 1-800-639-2211. Let's talk to Lauren in Craftsbury. Hi, Lauren. What's on your mind today? Lauren, are you there? Well, let's see if we can get Kathleen in Williston on the line. Kathleen, welcome to the program.
Hi there. How are you? Thanks for taking the call. I know your wife, by the way. We were nurses together.
It's a small world.
Small world. I have a just a comment to make. I heard the other day, and I don't know who the gentleman was, who was talking about taxing sugared beverages. He was unclear as to what sugared beverages were. He couldn't define them, so he was not for sugared beverages being taxed. And really, they're just beverages with sugar added, and they are a health. They do impact people's health in Vermont and all over the world. So I would be more likely to tax a bad health choice than I would a payroll, where lots of people in Vermont, including people in unions, nurses, teachers, other workers, policemen, are not making very much money to begin with. So I think that we should start looking at taxing behaviors that are that cost us all lots of money. And that's my comment for today.
Okay, Kathleen, thanks for your phone call. Neil, I guess the question comes down, soda, yes, it's got a ton of sugar in it. Mm-hmm. But then there gets to be sort of a gray area with sports drinks, and certain juices have maybe 8% juice in them, and they've got a whole bunch of sugar. So you get down to an area where the definition gets a little complicated.
Yeah, I think – I mean, the idea here is they're trying to single out sodas and really sugary beverages. But you will have a debate over what should be considered a sugar-sweetened beverage and how much sugar it should have, or percentage of sugar it should have to qualify. I think the difference between that and the payroll tax is the sugar tax won't raise nearly as much money as the 0.7% payroll tax to sort of consider as a perfect swap out is not really feasible. A 0.7% payroll tax, as you said, will raise $90 million. I think the 2 cent per ounce sugar tax is projected to raise around $30 million or so. So it can't cover all of the things the state wants to do with Medicaid if you go just with the sugar tax. But what is a sugar sweetened beverage? We'll all know probably fairly soon.
Well, it's a very healthy debate at the State House over this issue. Anthony Yarapino is the head of a group called the Alliance for a Healthier Vermont. He says the tax is needed to discourage the consumption of these sugary beverages that has led to an epidemic rise of obesity.
This is the first generation of American kids that are predicted to live shorter lives than their parents, unless we do something dramatic to curb obesity.
Jim Harrison is the director of the Vermont Grocers and Retail Association. His group strongly opposes this new tax.
This is a social experiment. No other state has done anything like this. What we're going to do is send business out of state, and none of the other surrounding states do anything anywhere remotely close to this.
Terry, what do you think people's reaction would be to this tax? It's one thing to talk about changes to the income tax. It's something else to talk about perhaps an increase to the gas tax. How do you think this tax is going to do at the State House?
Well, I kind of have thought from the beginning that this will end up being the thing that pops out like the 1st of May as a solution to, as a partial solution to something. Because yes, it's going to be a little bit tough to get over it has that people know what soda is. They buy it. Yeah, I'm against it because you just want to whap me with a tax. But there's this other compelling argument of, soda contains a lot of corn syrup and it's not as healthy for you as, it may be worse for you than you think. And so I think of all the options out there, it seems like one that, that might just slip through.
Now, Pete, Governor Peter Shumlin clearly does not like this tax. Senate President John Campbell does not like this tax. A lot of the House members and Senate members along the Connecticut River Valley don't like this tax. What do you think the outlook is for this?
I was eavesdropping on a conversation between Anthony Yarapino, the guy who's responsible for pushing this sugar sweetened beverage tax in the legislature, and a lawmaker on the House Committee on Healthcare. And he was making his case, and I think he got through to that legislator on the point that this is a product that is uniquely bad, especially for children. and that it's playing an outsized role in the obesity problem. Where he begins to run into resistance, however, is this legislator said he's got small convenience store owners who are the pillars of his community, and he's just not in a position to be able to do something like this because of the reception that it gets from that segment of his district and his constituency. And I think that there are a lot of legislators that are going to be struggling with that. It's unclear whether this proposal has the votes to get past the House Committee on Ways and Means, let alone the Senate, where I think odds are even steeper. So I think of this as more of a progression. I think that there's going to be a soda tax one day. I'm not sure that this is the year.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to John in Stratford. Hi, John. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. Hey, I am absolutely astounded at the lack of action on our budget deficit and structural financial crisis that this state faces. Where is the leadership that Richard Snelling and Ralph Wright provided the last time we had a similar situation? Where is the leadership that is asking and looking for bipartisan solutions, long-term solutions to our problems?
So, John, are you suggesting in 1991 the Governor Snelling and Speaker Wright came up with a plan that was going to be a three-year plan to have a graduated income tax surcharge? Is that what you're talking about?
And spending cuts and spending freezes. And it was a combination. And it was a Republican governor who called for tax increases. We need a Democratic House Speaker who pushed budget cuts and reduction in the size and scope of government. We need – it's like we're in denial. We have a structural problem. We have to address it. We need bipartisan leadership. It's sorely lacking.
John, many thanks for your phone call. Let's talk to Randy in Underhill. Hi, Randy. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Sure can.
So I thought that was a good argument that was just made, that companies that aren't paying a good wage and nor supplying insurance are putting the burden on all of us that are paying for insurance. So I don't know the details of the tax, but why not, if companies are paying for insurance, why tax them and put a heavier tax on the companies that are not offering any insurance to incentivize them to do so?
Well, you know, that is an argument that a lot of people make, Randy, and there already is a tax that essentially serves that purpose. It's called the Catamount Assessment. It was put in place when Catamount Health was the government program insurance subsidy program for folks that couldn't afford to pay full freight, and it amounts to about $500 per employee per year. And there are a lot of people who say, look, let's ratchet that up. If you're not paying for insurance for your employees, then you ought to be paying something so that the rest of us don't have to cover that cost. The problem that you run into is it becomes pretty disruptive economically when you ratchet that fee up too much. And that's essentially one of the things that ended up killing Peter Shumlin's single payer program, is that he was going to have to assess a payroll tax on businesses that were not yet accustomed to paying for health insurance. And their macroeconomic modeling showed that this would indeed put some of those businesses under, that they just wouldn't be able to absorb it, and you would see this incredible economic dislocation. So even legislators that agree that these businesses aren't paying their full share have to figure out a solution that raises some of that money without destroying thousands of, you know, 1, 2, 3, 5, 10-person employee businesses that we have in the state.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Lyle in Belvedere. Hi, Lyle. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Yes, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that I ran for mayor of Burlington. I'm 80 years old, back when Dean Davis was elected, and I opposed the sales tax on the grounds that I predicted no legislator or senator would ever lose their seat for voting for increases. And that prediction has come true. And so, therefore, you know, now we have a governor or people that want to put a tax on fuel oil for home heat. This is absolutely ridiculous. We need to stop spending the money and pull in our, tighten our belt. As an 80-year-old living on Social Security and a very small pension, I think the state's going downhill.
Okay, Lyle, thanks very much for your phone call. Terry, is this the argument that Republicans at the State House will be making in the next month or so, that it's a mistake to look at new tax revenue? Instead, we have to address a more structural issue with the budget?
Yes, and I think it's the argument that, in a sense, Governor Shumlin has made. I think they do know that this is a structural problem, and it may be too early to say that they haven't come up with a solution. Of course, the clock is ticking. But, certainly the notion that this is a structural problem is out there and under consideration.
Today, we're looking at the people and issues of the second half of the session. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. When we come back, we're going to take a look at this new bill that has just come out of the House Education Committee. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. We've got a group of reporters here with us today. Terry Hallenbeck of 7 Days, Neil Goswami of the Vermont Press Bureau, and VPR's Pete Hirschfeld. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. Now, just before the town meeting break, the House Education Committee passed out a major bill that's designed to expand the size of school districts across the state. It calls for all districts to have at least 1,100 students in the next few years. Dave Sharp is the chairman of the committee.
I'm pretty confident that these new school districts are going to be welcomed by the majority of voters. They are going to be more efficient. They're going to deliver better education to our students, and they're going to save some money.
Now, the plan also attempts to moderate property tax increases by including a 2% cap on per pupil spending in each of the next 3 years. Representative Sharp says it's critical to address the issue of school spending.
Some school districts are doing quite well in restraining spending and being efficient with their tax dollars, and other school districts are, high, very high.
Washington County Senator Ann Cummings is the chairwoman of the Senate Education Committee. She has some serious concerns about this 2% cap.
My gut feeling is that that's going to impact small schools who don't have a whole, they don't have very big budgets. They're very tight right now, and they're having a hard enough time meeting any kind of an acceptable educational standard. And I think this may just push them over the edge. So I think we want to take a look at that.
So, Pete, as we look at the first part of this bill, this idea of having larger school districts, would it be fair to describe this bill as having kind of a voluntary / mandatory approach? So the idea is go out and do it now. Try to do it in the next few years, and there may be some incentives. But if you don't, then somehow the state is going to do it for you?
Yeah. That's exactly what it is, and they're creating a series of financial incentives that are going to give the biggest rewards to the districts that form these larger entities the quickest. What they're really trying to do is move from a governance system where we have 277 individual school districts across the state into a few dozen what they're calling pre-K through 12th grade education systems. Now, you don't necessarily need to get rid of school boards or dissolve your districts in order to belong to one of these new systems, but they want to get people working together in ways that they're not working together right now so that schools can begin doing things like sharing teachers, having a single principal oversee a number of different schools instead of having one principal for each school. And they say this is going to save money, and as importantly, it's going to make sure that schools like Ann Cummings was just referring to in some rural areas that are finding themselves offering fewer and fewer programs being delivered by fewer and fewer teachers because they just can't afford to do things given their dwindling student population, will suddenly have this new universe of academic opportunities before them.
And Terry, there are a lot of people in education now. I'm thinking about the Vermont School Boards Association. I'm thinking about the Teachers Union that really have some strong concerns about this cap. And I think in part it's because there are a number of school districts in Vermont that are losing students. And if you cap per pupil spending, you could have a town that actually level funded their budget, and yet their per pupil spending might be going up 4 or 5%. So this cap could have a huge impact in those communities.
Yeah, the cap is flawed, and the flaw is its arbitrariness. Of you could be a very high spending district and not go up much, and you're not whacked, and you could be a low spending district that loses a few students and gets whacked. So the cap is not going to survive, I don't think, and I think they know that. It was a placeholder for we have to before we send this away at town meeting, we have to show that we have plans to cut something immediately. And they hadn't quite figured out the nuances, and so this cap exists. I think the Ways and Means Committee is working on tweaking that, and as Ann Cummings referred to, the Senate's not happy with it. So I don't think anyone really expects it to stay in place as is, but I don't know. You know, the solutions are always tricky because when you break it down to you can say that these schools you can consolidate and it'll all work out, but when you break it down to an actual district, there's sometimes problems of no, they're more isolated, or no, they're, once they do start working with another group of towns, they will end up being the short – the one left out within a few years, and that school will end up closing because the local community will have less control over that decision. So it's tricky.
And Neil, a lot of people were waiting to see what happened on town meeting day. It was a somewhat normal year. Mm-hmm. 20 budgets went down at this time last year. It was 35, and that set a lot of people in motion to have some sort of education reform. So how does the experience of town meeting day affect lawmakers in the second half of the session? Does it make them feel like, well, there really isn't a crisis? Or do they think, you know what, we still got to do something about this?
I don't think it's going to really change their thinking all that much. Everyone knows and understands that we need a long-term solution to the way we pay for public schools in Vermont. Whether if we had lost 25 budgets had gone down or 30 budgets had gone down, would that have changed their minds? I don't know. I think the sort of picture coming out of last year's town meeting set the stage, and regardless of what happened this year, things were going to remain on that trajectory of a real earnest attempt to find a long-term solution.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Cheryl in White River Junction. Hi, Cheryl. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I am a convenience store owner, and I took offense at the implication that we are somehow freeloading off the taxpayers in this state. The fact of the matter is we cannot afford to pay health care for even 5 employees. When I opened this business 20 years ago, Major Medical with eye care and accident insurance cost me $109 a month per employee, and all my employees were insured, all my full-time employees. At that time, I also supplied dental, fully paid, and long-term care insurance, fully paid. As time has gone on and margins have shrunk and credit card usage has increased, those things have fallen away, although I still do pay 100% dental insurance for all my full-time employees. So the solution is not penalizing small business owners that are struggling to stay alive in this state and who, like me, cannot afford to move our businesses into another state. I'm not sure what the solution is, but small business owners in Vermont are the backbone of Vermont and do not deserve to be vilified.
Cheryl, thanks for your phone call. Neil, if we look at the number of businesses in Vermont that don't offer health insurance, we see most of them are like Cheryl. They're, you know, 5 to 15 employees.
Right. And, you know, they're most businesses in Vermont are like that, I would venture to guess. But unfortunately, we have a healthcare system that is largely based on employer-sponsored healthcare. So we have most people, when they get a job, they have an expectation or a hope that their employer is going to be contributing to their healthcare plan. And it's becoming increasingly difficult for small businesses like mom-and-pop shops to do that. And I think the balance that the governor couldn't find in a single-payer plan was trying to find a way to have even the smallest businesses in Vermont contribute in a way that doesn't shut them down but allows their employees and others to have access to health care. That's really the trick, finding that balance where everyone is contributing in some sort of equitable way and everyone is getting care. But so far, nobody's been able to find that balance, which is why the governor's plan went on the back burner.
And there were plenty of people who said to the governor when he said, look, we can't some of these businesses just can't afford this level of payroll tax, who said, well, then – go to the businesses that can afford it, plus some, and charge them higher amounts. If there are corporate entities that are making enough money to pay high wages and provide Cadillac health insurance benefits, then those are the ones that can also afford to pay a higher payroll tax while allowing business owners like Cheryl, who just can't accommodate that kind of expense in their margins, shouldn't suffer so that these well-heeled corporate entities can pay the same amount as percent amount as them.
Yeah, and that's really a political calculation that anyone who puts forward a plan like that has to take on.
Terry, there's also a plan to allocate more than $10 million a year to clean up Lake Champlain and other waterways in Vermont. There seems to be some agreement on the policy aspects of that legislation, but there's a healthy debate over the funding source for this bill. I believe it includes a 2-cent increase in the gasoline tax, a 0.5% increase in the rooms and meals tax. It also has a tax on fertilizer. What's the outlook for this bill?
Well, that's always the crux, is how to pay for it. I think that's always where it's become a problem. And so, yeah, the House Fish, Wild, and Water Resources Committee came up with those taxes. I think the House Ag Committee has taken them out. Now it'll be up to the Ways and Means Committee whether to put them back in. It, you know, they have to find a way to pay for it. And I think, you know, it's really just a question. There's disagreement over who should carry the bigger burden. You know, and I think they're fine. This legislation seems like it will, more than in any in the past, get at farm contributions to phosphorus to the lake. But everybody's always been reluctant to put too much of a burden on farms because, after all, that's what we are, right? A farming state. And so the fertilizer tax, you know, went in. The Fish and Wildlife Committee comes out of ag because they don't want to whack the farmers. But, I think in the end, farmers are going to have to pay some of the burden. It'll be interesting to see how that one gets divvied up because with the federal EPA hanging over their head with stricter rules that would cost even more, something will definitely have to be done.
Pete, we're almost out of time, but usually members of the House and Senate Transportation Committee do not like the idea of using the gas tax for what they would say non-transportation purposes. How's that going to go over this year?
They don't think that the connection between cleaning up the lake and the state's transportation infrastructure is close enough to warrant using a gas tax for the lake cleanup plan. And we're already beginning to see some real pushback from the chairman of the House Transportation Committee.
And they have their own budget gap and within transportation to make up too that they're hoping to raise from gasoline.
It's going to be fascinating to see how all these issues get settled in the next 2 months. Many thanks to our panel today, Terry Hallenbeck of 7 Days, Neil Goswami of the Vermont Press Bureau, and VPR's Pete Hirschfeld. Many thanks for being on the program today.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
That is it for today on Vermont Edition. Monday on the program, we'll discuss the causes and effects of women living in poverty in Vermont. We'll hear how childcare, transportation, and housing affect a woman's ability to rise out of poverty, and we'll learn about programs in place to help them. So send your questions or comments about breaking the cycle of poverty to vermontedition@vpr.net and listen Monday at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Patty Daniels and Rick Sengary. We had production assistance from Michelle Owens. Mary Williams directed the program. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.